Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Mr. Darcy's Matchmaker, a Pride and Prejudice variation, by Summer Hanford. Narrated by Ruth Urquhart. Chapter 1. 21 years ago. The adults meant to look after them in the garden were not paying any attention. Astute for her 5 years, Anne could tell that by the way Cousin Fitz's nanny presented them with her profile, as she and her maid spoke with rapid, quiet words, their faces creased with worry. Normally supervised to the point of boredom, because, as her mamma put it, "you are frail like your namesake," Anne grinned and started down the hill. A decorative pond beckoned at the bottom. Fitz, composed and austere at 7, hurried after her.
"Anne, we aren't to go near the pond." "You aren't to go near the pond. Your nanny said, 'Master Fitz, stay away from the pond today.' She meant you as well,"
he said, stopping.
"You are to stay away from the pond today too."
Anne turned back to ask,
"Why today?" "Because yesterday George pushed me in and ruined my new coat."
Anne pursed her lips.
"Did you push him in?"
Fitz shook his head.
"No, why would I?" "To get him back."
He shook his head again.
"When George does something wrong, Mama says I am to do what is right."
Anne considered that and didn't care for the notion.
"I would have pushed him in and ruined his coat too. Then you would have been in even bigger trouble."
"Was Aunt Anne angry about your coat?"
"She was, but she didn't get out of bed."
Fitz kicked a toe into the turf.
"She said I can't play with George for a sennight, so I guess it's good you and Aunt Catherine came so I can play with you, until I can play with George again."
Anne huffed, whirled, and resumed her trundle down the hill, at the bottom of which the lily-dotted pond waited. When she reached it, she climbed up onto the stone verge to peer into the murky water, visible between fat lily pads. A quick look showed Fitz had given up staying away from the pond, and followed.
"You should get down from there,"
he said, stopping several feet away.
"Are there frogs?"
Anne leaned out, seeking one.
"My nanny told me a story where a frog is a cursed prince, and you throw him at a wall, and he becomes a prince again."
From behind her, Fitz asked,
"What if he's not a prince?"
Anne pursed her lips again, thinking.
"I won't throw him hard in case he's only a frog."
She turned from the pond to look around, then pointed to the low garden wall, visible through climbing roses.
"We can catch one and throw him at that wall."
Fitz followed her pointing finger, frowning. He always frowned. He was very serious. Anne felt certain he would be much more fun if he would run and laugh, like Cousin Richard. Although, as her mother had forbidden her to run, to see Fitz run would only make her sad. Fitz turned back to her.
"We can't catch a frog. We aren't to play in the pond."
"I want to catch a frog, Prince."
Her nanny, who was inside helping the grown-ups with something to do with Aunt Anne, would never be as lax as Fitz's nanny. Anne had to take advantage of this frog-catching opportunity, because another may not come. Fitz inched a bit closer to the water.
"How does one catch a frog?"
"In the story, the princess had a golden ball, and she dropped it in the pond."
"That is irresponsible,"
Fitz said, with considerable seriousness and surety.
"It was an accident."
"It is irresponsible to have accidents."
Anne stared at him for a long moment, then turned back to the pond.
"I don't have a golden ball. Do frogs hide under lily pads?"
"I do not know where frogs hide, because I am not to play in the pond."
"Richard would know."
"Richard is not here, and he's too grown up to play with little girls. He's almost 10.
Anne stuck out her tongue at Fitz, then turned back to the waiting water once more. Leaning out as far as she dared, she searched for a frog. Something moved in the murky depths.
"You are going to get in trouble."
Pretending not to hear Fitz, Anne poked a lily pad. It dipped under and popped back up without a frog.
"Anne, I forbid you to play in the pond," Fitz said.
She looked back to find him standing very straight, his hands balled at his sides and a deep frown on his face, and told him,
"You can't tell me what to do." I can. Mother says we're to marry some day, and that means I will be your husband, and husbands tell their wives what to do.
Anne scrunched her nose, thinking that over, then shook her head.
No. Yes, husbands tell their wives what to do.
She shook her head again, curls swinging.
No, I am not going to marry you some day.
Fitz stared at her as if she'd become the frog she sought.
You must. Mother said you will, and Aunt Catherine agreed, and Papa and Uncle Lewis say it's a fine idea.
Anne studied Fitz where he stood on the green lawn, framed by a backdrop of carefully tended hedges set against his home of Pemberley, the sky a bright blue beyond. It was a nice garden, and a nice home. She preferred it over Rosings, but only because there was no one at all to play with there. None of that meant she wanted to marry boring, frowning Cousin Fitz, though.
No. You must,
Fitz repeated, louder.
Shh! You'll make them come get us. They should come get us. We aren't to play in the pond. You aren't to play in the pond because your coat got ruined. I don't have a coat.
Fitz looked so angry, she thought he might spit or cry, but then boys didn't cry. Anne turned back to the pond and saw him. A big, fat, bright green speckled frog, right on top of a lily pad. He was the brightest green she'd ever set eyes on, and his belly was a beautiful glowing yellow, and she could practically see the golden crown that should be on his head. He must certainly be a prince, just waiting to get thrown into a wall to break the curse on him. She leaned out, moving very slowly. The frog watched with one large round eye. Anne leaned closer. The frog tensed.
Anne, you'll fall in!
Anne grabbed onto the edge of the wall with one hand and slowly lifted the other, reaching.
Anne!
Shh! She shot back, not taking her attention off the frog.
Don't worry, Mr. Frog Prince. I won't throw you hard.
The frog jumped. Anne lunged. Her hand on the wall slipped free. A squeal left her as her face plunged for the murky water. Hans caught her arm and yanked. Anne screeched again because Fitz's pulling hurt. He pulled her right off the wall and onto the grass, where she landed in a heap.
Ow!
She shook free of his grip.
That hurt. I saved you from the pond.
He smiled, smug.
You hurt my arm, but I kept you from getting wet. You made me lose the frog.
His frown returned in force.
I saved you.
Behind Fitz, his nanny and the maid rushed up. Fitz's nanny dropped into a crouch beside Anne.
What happened? Are you hurt, Miss Anne?
Fitz hurt my arm.
Anne aimed a sour look at her cousin.
I saved her from falling into the pond, where she is not supposed to play,
Fitz said, proud once more.
Quite right, Master Fitz.
His nanny clasped Anne's little shoulders and stood her upright.
You aren't to play in the pond. There now, Miss Anne, does your arm truly hurt?
Anne rubbed her shoulder and glared at Fitz.
You ruined everything.
Now, little miss,
the maid said, crouching down on her other side.
Master Fitz was doing what's right. He knows no one wants to add more troubles to your mamma's. Not with Lady Anne's condition.
As she spoke, the maid brushed at Anne's skirt, flicking away mud and grass.
Something is wrong with Aunt Anne.
Anne should have realised. Something wrong always made adults forget about her, like the times when her papa wasn't feeling well.
She's sick, Fitz said. That's why your mamma came here, to take care of her. They're sisters.
I know that,
Anne said. Angry, Fitz knew why they were visiting, but her mamma hadn't told her. Wanting to sound as sure and important as he sounded, she added,
And now that my mamma is here, Aunt Anne will get better.
Fitz's nanny and the maid exchanged a look, one of those grown-up looks for when something terrible was happening and they didn't think Anne should know. In mute accord, they stood.
Certainly, Lady Anne will be better soon, Fitz's nanny said to Anne. Now, let's go in and get you cleaned up, miss.
Aye, the maid said in a low voice, before her mamma sees her all muddy and demands we be let go without references. She said the words far over Anne's head and to Fitz's nanny, but Anne still heard. She never understood why adults thought she couldn't hear things they said. They started for the house, and Fitz fell in step beside Anne.
"You should thank me for saving you from the pond."
Anne stuck her tongue out again.
"Nanny says you shouldn't pull faces," he said.
Anne crossed her eyes as well. Fitz tipped his head up to a superior angle.
"You'll trip and fall, walking with your eyes like that."
Anne uncrossed her eyes, because he was right.
"You are so boring. You are going to be a terrible wife." "I am not, because I am not going to marry you,"
Anne said. Not caring if she got in trouble with her mama, she started running for the house, ignoring the calls of Fitz's nanny to slow down and come back. Chapter 2. 16 Years Ago. Fitz tromped down the hall leading to the piano parlour. He didn't like it when his Aunt Catherine and Cousin Anne came to visit. It was better when Uncle Lewis used to come too, because Fitz's papa liked Uncle Lewis, and Aunt Catherine had been nicer when he was alive. But the past few visits had been awful. Aunt Catherine made the staff nervous, and Fitz's papa grouchy. And Anne made Fitz nervous and grouchy. 10 now, she was even more trouble than ever. Fitz knew that at home in Rosings, Anne was never allowed to play outside or to run. Not that girls should, but that didn't mean that when she was at Pemberley and all the grown-ups were distracted, that she could ignore the rules.
"Fitz!"
a familiar voice called. Halting, Fitz turned to see George coming down the hallway.
"Where are you off to?" George asked upon reaching him. "Want to fish?"
Fitz shook his head.
"You know I have a dance lesson."
"I also know you don't like dance lessons, and it's a splendid day."
Indeed, each time Fitz passed a window, sunlight streamed in, so strong he could see individual rays. Motes of dust swirled within them. They danced at his passing, taunting him with the echo of freedom of being outdoors. With a sigh, Fitz shook his head.
"I must attend my lesson."
"Very well."
George started down the hall, setting them moving.
"If you insist on dance lessons, I'll be the girl, but only because I know you can't learn it backwards."
Fitz eyed George askance, worried about what he must say.
"Cousin Anne is here. She will be the girl."
"All the better. We can take turns dancing with her."
"I'm not certain that would be correct."
George halted again, catching Fitz's arm.
"How do you mean?"
Fitz dropped his gaze to the thick runner.
"Aunt Catherine says she does not want Anne spending time with you."
"Who did she say that to?"
A glance up showed George's face red with anger. Fitz dropped his gaze again.
"My papa."
It was just one of the ways in which Aunt Catherine angered Fitz's papa. But apparently she must be at Pemberley no matter who she aggravated, because Fitz's mother was unwell again, and everyone seemed very worried about her and the baby she carried.
"And did your father tell the staff that I am not to spend time with your cousin?"
George demanded. Fitz studied the swirling vine pattern on the runner, thinking that over.
"I do not believe so."
"Well then,"
George's voice sounded normal again,
"let us go to your dance lesson with your cousin Anne, and we can both dance with her."
"But Aunt Catherine said..."
"Is she your mother?"
George interrupted. Fitz shook his head.
"No."
"Is she your papa?"
"No."
"Then it doesn't matter what she said."
George started walking again. Fitz hurried to catch up.
"Very well, but only if Anne wants to dance with you."
George flashed him a smile.
"She will."
Fitz trailed him into the parlour, thinking that was likely true. Almost 12 like him, George had all the confidence Fitz lacked when it came to interacting with people.
"You're late,"
Anne said, as Fitz entered, then added,
"Good afternoon, George."
"You should call him Mr. Wickham,"
Fitz corrected, darting a look at the dance master where he sat at the pianoforte.
"It's not proper to address him by his Christian name, because you are not related."
Anne rolled her eyes ceilingward, then turned back to George to curtsy.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham."
George bowed.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Berg." "You are indeed late, Master Fitzwilliam," the dance instructor said, "and on a day when you have such a proper partner. I assume this will not become a habit."
Fitz shook his head, marshalling an apology.
"It's my fault," George said stoutly. "I waylaid him in the hall. He did tell me we would be late. If there is anyone to blame, it is me, and I humbly beg forgiveness."
The dance master turned a pleased look on George and nodded.
"Very well said, Master George. You have earned the first dance. You would do well to take notes, Master Fitzwilliam, both on Master George's apology and his fine footwork, which we will now witness."
"Yes, sir." Fitz failed to keep a sullen note out of his voice. He'd been about to apologize. He simply wasn't as quick with his words as George.
"But I want to dance with Fitz first,"
Anne said, as the dance master flipped through several pages of music.
"Now, Miss Anne, you know full well that if you turn down Master George, you must sit out the remainder of the dance. We are here not simply to learn the movements, but the propriety of such an event. Comportment is at least as important as footwork."
"If you make me sit out, they'll have no one to dance with," she protested.
Fitz wished she would not always argue. The only person she didn't argue with was her mother, but then no one argued with Aunt Catherine. George bowed to Anne again, with a flourish that showed he benefited more from Fritz's lessons than Fritz did.
"Mr. Berg, would you do me the honour of this dance?"
In a lower but still clearly audible voice, he added,
"If you do not, I will have to play the female so Fitz can learn. I plead with you to save me."
Anne giggled.
"Oh, very well."
Fitz wished apologies and pleading came as easily to him as they did to George. The dance instructor awarded George another of his pleased, doting smiles.
"Please begin there, so I may observe you while I play. And if you are able, attempt to hold a conversation while you dance. It is an art also worth practicing."
George and Anne formed up, and the dance master began a much livelier tune than he ever employed when Fitz danced. Fitz moved off to the side to watch. He could see George speak and Anne reply, but couldn't decipher the words over the pianoforte. Much as Fitz didn't care for dance lessons, he vowed to endure them until he danced with perfection, so he mastered his envy of George's skill and focused on watching his friend's feet. When the dance ended, the master stood to clap.
"Well done! Very well done, both of you!"
He sat back down and shuffled his music again.
"Now, Master Fitzwilliam, please ask Mr. Berg to dance. We will go with half time, so slow steps, and you should attempt to converse."
Fitz took George's place and bowed to Anne.
"Will you give me the honour of the next dance, Mr. Berg?"
Anne dipped her head in a very regal way that made her resemble her mother, even though she was only 10.
"I will, Mr. Darcy."
They began the dance, very slow, Fitz counting his steps. In obvious boredom, George wandered away to gaze out the window.
"Conversation, not counting,"
the dance master said over his playing.
"Comment on the weather,"
Anne hissed under her breath.
"The weather is very fine, do you not think?"
Fitz said. He missed a step and went back to counting.
"It is unseasonably cool, yet very sunny,"
Anne said, in a voice that mimicked her mother. Fitz kept counting. They moved about the room in a pretense of other dancers, first nearer to the pianoforte, then away again.
"George said I should sneak out tonight and meet him in the orchard,"
Anne said quietly. Fitz missed a step, frowned, and found his place in the dance.
"Why?"
"He said it will be fun, but I will not go."
That was a relief, because Fitz was quite certain that would get her into a lot of trouble with her mother.
"I don't like him," Anne added.
Fitz cast her a quick look.
"Because he said you should go to the orchard."
She shook her head and extended her hand for him to clasp in a turn.
"The last time we visited, he pulled my hair."
"I'm certain if you ask, he'll apologise, so you should ask. You must learn to like him."
She scrunched her nose, like she did when she found something confusing.
"Why?"
"You will have to see him often. He is my dearest friend."
While he didn't want Anne sneaking out, Fitz couldn't have her at odds with George.
"I will tell him to apologise for pulling your hair."
"An apology will not help, and I will not have to see him often."
They went through several shorter steps and pauses where Fitz had to count to keep his place in the music. When they met once more, he said,
"Yes, you will, once we are married."
"I am not going to marry you,"
Anne said firmly.
"Yes, you are. Our parents agreed."
Anne's round face pinched into anger.
I am not. I asked my papa before he died, and he said I don't have to if I don't want to.
The steps drew them apart, and Fitz went back to counting. He tried to think of a new topic on which they could converse, but he couldn't keep track of the steps and pick something to talk about at the same time. His carefully marked steps brought him back around to her, and a sense of panic bloomed. What conversation would not result in disagreement? He missed a step, almost tripping.
"Master Fitzwilliam, keep track of your feet," the dance master called.
Heat suffused Fitz's cheeks. A maid rushed into the room and dipped the barest curtsy, her eyes bright with excitement.
"Master Fitzwilliam, Miss Anne, you have a new relation. Lady Anne has given you a sister, Master Fitzwilliam."
Fitz gaped at her.
"The baby came and he's a girl."
"The baby came and she is a girl, Master Fitzwilliam, a strong, healthy girl."
Anne clasped her hands before her.
"How wonderful! What is her name?"
"But I wanted a brother for me and George to play with,"
Fitz groused. Ignoring him, the maid smiled at Anne and said,
"Her name is Georgiana, after Mr. Darcy."
"Georgiana?"
George repeated. Fitz looked to see him framed in one of the windows, his blonde curls made into a halo by sunlight. His face, hard to see against the backdrop of the sun, didn't seem happy. Fitz imagined that George didn't like sharing his name. George liked to share Fitz's things, but not his own.
"Yes, Georgiana."
The maid added a severe look to her words, aimed at George.
"But I am named after Mr. Darcy. He's my godfather,"
George said, his aggrieved tone confirming Fitz's guess.
"Well, now you are both named after Mr. Darcy, you young scamp, and you'd best run along. I was sent to collect Master Fitzwilliam and Miss Anne so they might come greet little Georgiana."
"Not me?"
George asked before the maid could turn from him.
"No, not you."
She shook her head, but her voice was kind as she continued.
"You are a godson, Georgie Wickham, not a son. Best you always try to remember that."
With that, she spread her arms to gather Fitz and Anne and ushered them out of the room. Chapter 3. 15 years ago. Elizabeth, small for 5, scurried off deeper into the garden as Jane covered her eyes and started to count. It was a lovely June day, with plenty of flowers in bloom, honeybees buzzing about, and a bright blue sky above. Mrs. Hill, their housekeeper at Longbourn, had sent her, her older sister Jane, and 3-year-old Mary out to play, with one of the maids to watch them.
8, 9, 10, 11.
Jane's counting grew fainter as Elizabeth turned down one of the smaller paths.
"Lizzie, slow down,"
Mary called behind her. Elizabeth whirled to see her little sister trundling up the path, the maid trailing her, and hissed,
"Shh! Jane will know which way I went." "She can't see you,"
Mary said stoutly.
"She covered her eyes."
"But she can hear you. Go away and be quiet."
Elizabeth paused below a scrubby willow. Could she climb up into the tangled branches and not be seen?
"I want to hide with you,"
Mary said, her whisper not much quieter than her earlier call.
"You have to find your own place to hide."
Elizabeth felt she could get into the tree, but Mary was too little.
"You're going to ruin everything."
"But I want to hide with you. Jane hides with you."
"That's different," Elizabeth said. "Jane is my best friend."
Tears welled up in Mary's eyes.
28, 29, 30,
Jane continued, faintly heard through the trees.
"No, miss," the maid said. "Why not let your little sister hide with you? There's no harm in it."
Elizabeth pointed at the willow.
"I'm going to climb up there, and Mary is too little."
"I'm not,"
Mary said, and lifted her skirt to wipe her nose with her hem.
"Oh, miss, don't do that,"
the maid cried, pulling out a handkerchief. She knelt to wipe Mary's nose.
43, 44, 45...
"I'm running out of time,"
Elizabeth said. The maid looked over Mary's head at her.
"Then you'd best find a place to hide with your sister."
Elizabeth let out a long sigh.
"If I must."
She grabbed Mary's hand.
"Come on, we'll go..."
"Janie! Lizzie! Mary!"
Mrs. Hill's voice called from the direction of the house.
"Come in, girls. It's time to meet your new sister."
The maid scooped up Mary.
"Well, come on then. Playtime is over."
Elizabeth followed Mary and the maid, Jane joining them. When they reached the house, Mrs. Hill took Mary from the maid and shooed the girl back to her usual chores. Taking Mary with her, she then led the way upstairs.
"Take care to be quiet, girls," Mrs. Hill said,
as they started down the hall in the direction of their mother's bedchamber.
"Your little sister Catherine is sleeping still."
"Won't the new baby cry and wake her?"
Jane asked from where she walked beside the housekeeper.
"We can hope not," Mrs. Hill replied. "So far she seems quite the amiable little thing, and even more golden than you were, Janie, with pretty yellow curls already."
They entered to find their mother propped up in bed, looking small and pale, and clutching close a squirming little form topped by blonde curls. Their father stood at her bedside, frowning. Elizabeth couldn't remember when Mary was born, but she recalled when baby Catherine came, her mama had looked worried and her papa annoyed, and he'd said, "I suppose we must try yet again," which had made her mama cry, but Elizabeth hadn't understood the reason.
"Here you are, girls," Mrs. Hill said brightly. "This is your new sister."
"Yes," Mr. Bennet said flatly, as Elizabeth followed Jane to the bedside opposite him.
"Another girl."
Hugging the baby against her chest, Elizabeth's mamma looked up at him.
"We will simply try again."
"No, my dear," Mr. Bennet shook his head. "I am through trying."
"But Mr. Bennet, the entail, you require a son. Who else will look after all our girls?"
"It is quite obvious, Mrs. Bennet, that no matter how many times we try, you will only bear me daughters. The entail has worn out. My brother will inherit Longbourn when I am gone."
"What, then, will become of our daughters?"
Elizabeth's mother asked, her voice rising in pitch and volume. Beside Elizabeth, Mrs. Hill rocked Mary, who stuck her bald fist into her mouth.
"That is up to you, my dear," Mr. Bennet said crisply. "I will endeavour to clothe and feed them, but as you are their mother, their ultimate fates are in your hands. Were I you, I'd do my best to see them well married."
Mrs. Bennet looked from Jane to Elizabeth to Mary.
"Me? Surely you mean we will do our best to see them married, sir?"
"You,"
Mr. Bennet folded his arms across his chest.
"You bore 5 girls. You will see them married. It will be a good occupation for you."
"One more try," Mrs. Bennet pleaded. "I have no trouble with carrying and birthing them, not like some women. You've no need to worry over that."
"Believe me, Mrs. Bennet, I am not worried for you. You obviously descend from hardy stock. My worry is our attempt leaving me with yet another daughter to clothe and feed."
Mr. Bennet shook his head.
"No, we are done trying."
He uncrossed his arms to point at the new baby.
"That is your last."
In Mrs. Hill's arms, Mary let out a little hiccuping sob, drool coating her chin under the hand she had stuck in her mouth, and her eyes round. Elizabeth looked between her mamma and papa, not certain of what they spoke, but sure mamma had made papa very angry. Mrs. Bennet must have done something very awful. Mr. Bennet cast Mary a disgusted look.
"I will be in my study. Try, if you will, to keep the lot of them quiet. I won't have my home turned into a hen-house full of nonsensical clucking."
He pivoted and strode from the room. Mrs. Bennet burst into tears. Elizabeth's lower lip trembled. Reaching out, she took Jane's hand. That their mamma was crying made sense, because whenever Elizabeth did something bad and papa yelled at her, she cried. Only Elizabeth didn't know what mamma had done. Mrs. Hill bounced Mary, murmuring soothingly as she settled onto the edge of the bed.
"Now, now, Mrs. Bennet, he doesn't mean a thing by any of it. He's simply disappointed. He'll come around."
Elizabeth's mamma shook her head, tears streaming down her cheeks. Still crying, she stroked the little baby's chubby face.
"You are my last little one, my precious little Lydia."
"Is that her name, mamma?"
Jane asked.
"Yes, my little Lydia, my perfect little baby."
In the next room, a wail sounded. Mrs. Bennet squeezed her eyes shut, spilling out more tears.
"You take her, Mrs. Hill," she said in a barely audible voice.
put her in the crib with Catherine. Maybe they will quiet each other. I don't believe I have the strength to endure them at the moment.
Yes, Mum. Mrs. Hill.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?